The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 15th of July, 2021. On the podcast today, Andrew Duxbury, Finance Director at Galliford Try, discusses their trading statement, which showed strong business performance, improved profitability, and a high-quality order book. Plus, Ethan Ulyal, CEO of Challenger Energy, provides an update on the Saffron 2 appraisal well as part of the broader Saffron project. And Bill Brodie-Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals, talks about the plan for the next phase of exploration on the company's Donovan 2 copper-gold project in Mexico. And at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's an article there on Nuformix from Fran. There's one there from i3 Energy and Maestrano Group, all from Fran there. Galliford Try, another one from Fran. And of course, our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day. It was a fall yesterday. Cromec Group, up 11 or 12% to 17.48. Biggest faller, Tech Capital, down 4%. To 19 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
Joining me now on the podcast is Andrew Duxbury, Finance Director of Galliford Try. GFRD is the ticker. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Morning.
Yeah, well, you've just released a trading update for your full year results, and it's looking very positive, and we'll delve into those in a bit. Before we do, for people maybe not familiar with Galliford Try, just give us a brief overview, if you could, Andrew.
Of course. Well, we're a construction company, Justin. We operate across the UK from the southwest of England up to the Scottish Highlands, building the UK's social and economic infrastructure. So around 90% of our work is in the public and regulated sectors. Our main clients are in education, health, defence, highways and water sectors. And on that, since we last spoke a couple of weeks ago, when we launched our net zero carbon commitments, we've announced further contract wins with Scottish Water and with Northumbrian Water.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems to be going in the right direction. So you just released your full year results trading update. Could you take us through the highlights, Andrew, please?
Yeah, of course. Look, I'm delighted to report really strong progress in the financial year, which is our first year as a standalone construction business. Our profit before tax will be at the upper end of the range of the analyst estimates, and our margin improvement plan is progressing very well. We've maintained our well-capitalised balance sheet with an increase in our average month-end net cash to £164 million. And remember that we've got no debt and no pension liabilities. We've been really successful winning work and positions on frameworks, and our selective approach to bidding and our disciplined approach to risk management is reflected in a really high quality order book, which has increased to £3.3 billion spread across our focused sectors. And we've got 90% of this new financial year's revenue already secured, and that is a great position to be in. And that means we start this new financial year in excellent shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's looking very good. And, of course, big day on Monday, 19th of July. Restrictions are lifted for COVID. Will you be doing anything differently across your sites there, Andrew?
Well, look, the health, safety and importantly, the well-being of everyone on our sites and in our offices is absolutely the number one priority for us. All of our sites are operating at normal levels. They have been throughout the last 12 months. And we operate in accordance with industry COVID safety procedures. And we will maintain our focus on this, you know, well beyond next week.
Excellent stuff. And also, it's a very strong area, of course, and for good reason. You recently announced your commitment to achieving net zero carbon by 2030. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, this is a hugely important issue for us all. And Galliford Try has got a clear role to play, both in minimising our own carbon footprint and in helping to decarbonise the built environment and our economic and social infrastructure. So we're really proud that we've committed to achieve net zero across our own operations by 2030, and across all activities by 2045. And we're already well progressed on that journey. We have been for a number of years. So our own operational emissions have reduced 62% since 2012. And for example, by using flexible working to minimise travel, by sourcing renewable energy for our offices, by electrifying our car fleet, and by trialling electric plants on our sites. And we're already working with our clients as well to reduce the carbon in the built environment through re-engineering the design of buildings to create more carbon efficient designs. And more broadly, operating sustainably, working with our supply chain, our people, our communities, that is at the heart of our strategy. And we'll provide some more details on that with our full annual results announcement in September this year.
Yeah, that net zero carbon, huge mega trend there, massive trend. And talking about trends, a shorter term trend, there's been a lot of talk, on the media, in the market about cost inflation, labour shortages. Are you facing, any issues as a result of this, Andrew?
Well, look, there's certainly been higher inflation in parts of the supply chain, particularly some specific commodities like such as steel and other metals. But we've managed this so that there's been no significant impact on our trading. And maybe I could just give a couple of examples of how we've done that, Justin. So firstly, we assume an element of inflation into our contracts when we bid them. And this means that it's only the excess level of inflation that we need to worry about. Secondly, we procure our materials as early as possible. And that means we can lock in the prices and we can create ourselves certainty. And our active engagement with our supply chain, that's proved particularly important during this period. And we do work really, really closely with them. So all in all, we've been able to successfully manage and mitigate the challenge of inflation without any material impact on trading.
Excellent stuff. Well, Andrew, you're no stranger to this now. Every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies. To get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page, of course. So give them three quick reasons now why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Galliford Try to their watch list, please.
Okay. So look, firstly, the market. We've got a clear focus on sectors where we've got proven strengths, which have got the right balance of risk and reward for us, which have got high levels of structural demand underpinned by increasing government investment. So firstly, the market. Secondly, our disciplined approach. We are focused on risk management, on repeat client relationships, on selective bidding, and that allows us to access our chosen markets in a way that allows us to drive revenue growth and, more importantly, margin improvement. And thirdly, our strong financial position, that robust balance sheet, creates a platform for long-term profitable growth and a platform for delivering shareholder returns and dividend payments.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Eitan Uliel, Chief Executive Officer of Challenger Energy. CEG is the ticker there. Eitan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, nice to be here again.
Yeah, and you've just released a Saffron project update and funding term sheet, and we'll talk about that in a bit. As always, though, you've got lots of projects going on there. So for people not familiar, maybe, just give us a brief summary, a catch-up on the company itself, if you could, Eitan.
Sure. Well, I'm assuming most people who listen to this podcast are quite familiar with the company. But for those who aren't, Challenger Energy is an AIM-listed company. We have oil projects ranging from production through to development, appraisal and exploration projects, mm-hmm. largely centered on the Caribbean and the Atlantic margin. So in no particular order, we have five fields that are in production in Trinidad. We have a series of projects in Trinidad which are at various stages of appraisal slash development, which was the subject of today's announcement. We have a project in Suriname, which we hope will kick off in the next couple of months. And then we have some exploration prospects in the Bahamas and in Uruguay. Most people who follow this company will be familiar with the Bahamas, which is, what the company was about for the last 10 years. But we drilled a well there earlier in the year, and that's now become a much smaller focus of the company. And at the moment, all of the focus is on the things we're doing in Trinidad and Suriname, where the mantra and the mission is very simple. We're out to build production, build cash flow, and build some value in this company through those two things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so you've released some news on an update that is in relation to the logging of Saffron 2 appraisal well. Take us through that, if you could, Eitan.
So the Saffron project is a project in the southwest peninsula of Trinidad. It's an area of Trinidad. Trinidad is a very well-established oil-producing nation. The southwest peninsula of Trinidad's relatively unexplored compared to the rest. And in March of last year, an exploration well, the Saffron 1 well, was drilled there, which resulted in a discovery. And so we've been preparing for the drilling of the Saffron 2 appraisal well. The Saffron 2 appraisal well had an objective not of discovering oil, because we already knew there was oil there, but of now putting the well onto a production test and seeing how much oil can be produced and for how long, so that you can then sort of understand the producibility of the field and plan a development around that. Mm-hmm. So that was the sort of the big news in the company for the last little while. We started drilling the Saffron 2 well. We've released periodic updates. The drilling went reasonably well. We had a few drilling challenges along the way, but ultimately we completed the drilling to the target depth of 4,600 feet, plus minus, and we cased the whole well. So the whole thing is ready for production testing. And the final step before production testing was to complete the logging of the well. So we completed the logging, and that was the subject of today's announcement. Fundamentally, without getting into sort of the specifics, we found oil-bearing reservoir sands exactly where we thought they were, in both the upper, middle, and lower cruise target horizons. And so really, everything we thought we would know from Saffron 1, we have. We have a well that's fully cased top to bottom, and all work is now focused on getting this well on production testing, which all things being equal will happen on around the 23rd of July. So that's the next big thing here, to see what level of production we will get out of this well. And assuming we get a reasonable level of production, that then informs our ability to plan the drilling of several new wells in the field and submitting a development plan for approval with the authorities and taking this thing forward. To refresh people who may not be following it, ultimately we think the Saffron field has the potential to be quite a sizable and profitable little field. It could potentially wind up at around 30 wells and, you know, looking at $20-25 million a year of free cash flow coming out of it. So that's a material project, obviously, in the context of our company at the moment. It's more than material, it's company making. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite important that, you know, we've achieved what we said we were going to do. We've drilled the well, we've cased it, we've logged it, and now we're moving on to production testing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're saying what, in the range, hopefully in the range of 200, 300 barrels a day, is that right?
Yes, I mean, you know, obviously when you put a well on production, you have an initial production rate, which can be high, it can be low. And then you run the production for a while and you see how the production holds up, whether it falls off quickly, whether it doesn't. So that's the sort of thing you need to know so that you can then ultimately plan a development around that, plan how you're going to drill a lot more wells. But everything we thought we knew about this this field from Saffron 1 and now Saffron 2, we stick with our expectation that we should be able to get 200 to 300 barrels a day production out of this well. And that then, you know, that's solidly economic in and of its own right. And that then informs, as I say, how we go about planning a development, a broader field development off the back of that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so you're saying that you're going to commence that sort of production test around 23rd, is that right?
Correct. Okay. So 23rd of July, so shortly thereafter, we hope to have some information about sort of initial production rates, and then, you'd normally wait a while and see how it goes over a period of weeks to see what level of fall-off you get and what a more stabilised production rate looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing we spoke about a little bit today, the obvious question that we get asked by everybody is, great, so Saffron works, how are you going to pay for a development? That's a valid question. Mm-hmm. And in the background, we've been working on the way to fund a development. Now, obviously, once you get to a certain point, if you're drilling wells and the wells produce and, you know, oil price is good and you're selling the oil, so you have a lot of excess cash, and to an extent the thing can begin to fund itself. But you need to get to that point. So you have an initial period of drilling wells where you need the capital to do that. In the past, we have been roundly slated by many of our shareholders and commentators that we've done interesting financings, we've done dilutive financings, otherwise known as equity raisings, etc. And so what I did commit to do when I became the CEO several months ago now was to see how we can improve on that. You know, it's not easy right at the moment to organise funding for oil projects, particularly oil projects in, you know, frontier areas or you know, new projects. But we have quite pleasingly been able to get into a non-binding term sheet phase with a very large American headquartered institution that are specialists in lending money to oil companies for developments. So this is fundamentally debt or sort of quasi-debt funding linked to a view on the reserves and a view of on the resource and a view on the production rates. And so we were quite pleased to have got to this point where we have a term sheet in place with ARENA, as I mentioned, a large specialist lender to the oil industry. And they are just as eagerly as we are waiting to see what the outcomes of this Saffron 2 production test is, because that will then shape their view on to what extent they can advance funds against the production or the future production from future wells to drill those wells. And the facility we're talking about with them is in the sort of $10 million to start, and then can be scaled up to $17.5 million. And that would enable us to develop the Saffron project. It would enable us to drill the first several wells to the point where the project could then become self-funding. So that is also very, very positive progress. But like I said, they are waiting, we are waiting. I guess most of our shareholders are now waiting to see what the production results from this well look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And that's the sort of next big milestone, I suppose. And then maybe looking further out, what's your thoughts there, Ethan?
Well, we have lots going on. I mean, so obviously Saffron 2 production result, you know, and then pulling together what the Saffron development looks like, submitting a development plan, working with the authorities in Trinidad to figure that out, and, you know, Saffron 3, 4, 5 thereafter. Mm-hmm. The other thing sort of off on the side, we have a very interesting project in Suriname. It's kind of like a Saffron mini-me version, but there again we have to drill an initial well. You might want to call, we're calling an extended well test, but it's really like a proof of concept, a well to check to what extent the field there will produce and the economics around those wells. It's a different order of magnitude to Saffron. It's much shallower, much cheaper wells to drill, about $750,000 each. So we have the first one of those more or less ready to go. We have all the permitting in place. We have the environmental approvals in place, land access in place, etc. So we were planning to do that sometime in July, but the COVID situation in Suriname is pretty bad, to the point that you can't actually get people onto the drill site. So we've deferred that until such time as you know, operating conditions improve. Notionally, we're saying now we'd like to try and do it end of August, early September. That's all COVID pending. But at some point in the next few months, I'd like to see us get underway in Suriname. So that's another thing to look out for. And then there are other things happening across our portfolio. We're looking at a couple of other infill drilling options around Trinidad. We've got an automation project going with Weatherford in Trinidad. And then our exploration prospects. So we are waiting to hear back from the government in the Bahamas in relation to the extension of our licenses into a third exploration period. So that will hopefully take its course over the next few months. And we are waiting on formal signature of our license in Uruguay. Again, most things in Uruguay are on a very go slow, if not complete standstill, because of COVID. But as soon as we get that squared away, we can begin the first round of technical work on the licenses there. So, you know, there's plenty to keep us busy over the next 6 months, but really all focus is on what we're doing in Trinidad, and in particular on the Saffron project.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Eitan, you know the score. Every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. So to get on the list, of course, people have to hit that follow button. So give us three quick reasons now why they should hit that follow button and add Challenger Energy to their watch list, please.
Well, I feel like each time I come on this, I say the same things, and maybe it's a bit monotonous. But the first one is that we have... as I think, I hope I've conveyed, we have multiple things going on. We have multiple value catalysts over the next several months. Certainly we have the news and whatever happens with Saffron really in the next month or so. So, you know, why you should follow us? Well, there are things happening, and they're not happening in the far off future. They're happening now. And so those are all things that may be relevant to the value of our company and the interest in our company. The second thing really is, you know, it's not my place really to comment on market values and share prices and what have you, but we are, you know, by any metric, I would have thought a very attractively priced investment opportunity at the moment. That's for people to make up their own mind on, but certainly, you know, I would think that people who are interested and do their research now would see that it's a pretty attractive investment opportunity right at the moment. And so that's another reason to follow the company. And the third reason, I guess, is, you know, something I've said quite a bit about in the past. When you follow smaller oil and gas exploration companies, or when you invest in them, ultimately, you can't really control the outcomes of what the rocks deliver. You know, sometimes you win on that front, sometimes you don't. But what you do want is you want to know that you're investing in companies or following companies and teams of people working there who actually get the things done that they say they're going to do. So in our case, we drilled the well in the Bahamas earlier this year. That well was not the huge commercial success everyone wanted, and a lot of people were very disappointed by that, but we actually did it. We went out and did exactly what we said we were going to do, and the same now in Trinidad. You know, we said we needed to drill this well. We've drilled the well. We said we set out exactly what we were going to do, and we've achieved that. I can't now control the outcome of the production test. Like everyone, you know, I'm waiting to see what the result is. And obviously, I very much would like it to be a positive result that enables us to move forward with the development of the field. But fundamentally, we have done as a company exactly what we said we were going to do, which is I think, one of our calling cards and a reason why people might wish to follow us. We follow through on what we promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Eitan, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Speak again. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brodie-Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals, UFOs ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to catch up again.
Yeah, and you've released an RNS entitled Exploration Planning for Donovan 2 Copper Gold Project in Mexico. So we'll dig into that in a bit. But as always, Bill, just give us a brief summary as to what Alien Metal is all about. It's not just about, of course, Donovan 2. Plenty of things going on. So give us a brief roundup, if you could.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, Alien, we're a mineral exploration development company. We have currently sort of five core projects in two jurisdictions. So... three sort of core projects in Mexico, two silver and the Donovan 2 copper gold. And then we have the iron ore project, Hammersley project in Western Australia, and the Elizabeth Hill Money North silver PGE nickel copper project also in Western Australia. So, yeah, we got lots going on as ever.
Yeah. Okay, so take us through then. Your exploration planning here, Donovan 2, what's happening?
Yeah, well, Donovan 2, as you might recall, was in an earning agreement with Capstone Mining of Canada. They recently sort of dropped out. They did some work, felt the results they got didn't warrant their continued involvement. So we've sort of gone back, not quite to the drawing board, but refreshed our minds on what we'd been looking at prior to Capstone joining the process, and also digging a bit deeper into the sort of the signature identifiers that helped specifically the discovery of the San Nicolas deposit literally down the road, you know, 20 Ks away from Donovan 2, the sort of 100 million ton 1% copper deposit that Teck found a few years back. So we sort of put everything in the pot, really come out that we're still very comfortable with our original targets. You know, we're encouraged by some of the work Capstone did, but feel they didn't quite finish it off as maybe we would have done or done it in the same way. So we're trying this mobile metal ions MMI geochemical sampling program on the eastern part, which worked very well at San Nicolas. Another possible way of finding a hidden, blind in the RNS, like a hidden deposit that, you know, due to obviously fields and surface disruption, there's nothing sort of poking out of the surface. We're looking at getting some reinterpretation done. We've got a lot of geophysics now, maybe some fresh eyes with a, you know, sort of clear head, come back and have another look at that. And also, you know, I'm still very keen, and I think the team is keen to do some what we would call our maiden drilling to test a couple of targets that we don't feel have been properly tested so far.
Okay, and over what period is this going to happen then, Bill?
Well, we're getting on with the MMI work we're actually doing at the moment. So, I mean, that's only, I think, 60-odd samples. That will only take literally a few days. It's not it's a very straightforward area to work in. Access is fine. So that's ongoing now. The geophysical reprocessing, everyone's really busy in this industry at the moment, but, you know, that's going to hopefully start very soon. So we're talking a few weeks. And then the drilling, I think we're going to wait to get all these other results back in and really, you know, maximize the information we've got and the sort of planning ability to then hopefully finalize and maybe, you know, drilling in the coming quarter. Watch this space sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And exploration, like I say, it is exploration, isn't it? And it's how you look for it and you know, the techniques you use, and you can pick up things that other people have missed, I suppose.
Well, very much. I mean, and you know, it's no disrespect to anyone else, but everyone, you know, there are different ideas, different theories, different methods, you know, and sometimes you sometimes have to try more than one. Your first attempt might not be successful, and it's like, not necessarily because you're doing it wrong, but just maybe the geology's or the geophysics is telling you something different, or you're just off the mark. It's exploration. It's not, sadly, if you got it right every time, there'd be a lot more people doing it and, you know, a lot less sort of return on investment. But it does take, you know, quite a different, I suppose, different viewpoints and also looking at similar projects, which is why we've sort of gone back to the San Nicolas project and how they developed the exploration. And then you compare how the deposit sits in relation to some of this early exploration work.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Okay, Bill, well, just generally now, give us, if you could, in summary, three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add Alien Metals to their watch list, if you could.
Well, again, just what we were talking about, you know, and I didn't really mention, obviously, Donovan 2 is essentially a copper project. So copper is a fantastic commodity for now and for the future. With the growth of EV and everything associated with it. Our other core commodity, silver, also very very important and a very growing and in demand commodity. And iron ore is just incredible at the moment. I think spot price on the DSO was over $215 a ton just a couple of days ago, which is still holding up incredibly well and forecast to stay up there. So commodities that Alien have are, I would like to think, very very strong in demand and with a long-term outlook. Again, the jurisdictions we're working in, Mexico, fantastic historical mining tradition and skill set, great jurisdiction. We've got a great team there as well, which sort of feeds into the third reason, which is the people. Likewise in Australia, great, a mining jurisdiction. Where we're working, great locations. We're not in the middle of, the Tanami Desert, 1,000 kilometres from the nearest road. We're right next to really good infrastructure, both for the iron ore and for the Elizabeth Hill. And again, great people in the team. We're always looking at increasing that, developing that for everyone's benefit.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Bill, good to chat to you again, and hopefully we'll catch up soon. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for your time. Great to catch up.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Castillo Copper, down 10%, 2.5. At four, Avintrans, Nomura, 422. At three, Open Orphan, down 1%, 25.75. At two, Petromatad, wow, down 36.45% to 3.4. And at one, Poolbeg Pharma. It's a new spin-off, of course, listing, and it's POLB, spin-off from Open Orphan. Check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk, and top five most read RNSs are as follows. They are, at five, Cyrenus Energy, Sankrai 1 Gas Discovery. At four, New Formix, final results for the year. At three, 88 Energy, 100% working interest. At two, Immedia Group, termination of talks and lifting of suspension. And at one, Horizonte Minerals, Araguaia Nickel Project, operational update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.